Hello and welcome. This is our fifth episode of the Sociological Theory podcast for my sociological theory class. Welcome to the podcast. If you are in my class, then you will already know that there will be a slideshow to accompany this podcast posted on your Learn page. And you can follow along with that slideshow if you want to, or if you find it helpful to have visual aids as you're listening to this. But of course, you can still learn from this podcast if you choose not to follow along, or if you like to listen to the podcast while you're doing the dishes or something like that, which is what I like to do. So our topic for today is W.E.B. Du Bois, and you read some chapters from two different texts by W.E.B. Du Bois. You read some chapters from Black Reconstruction in America, 1860 to 1880, and you read a little bit from the beginning of The Souls of Black Folk. So let's start with the first slide here and talk a little bit about W.E.B. Du Bois himself and the context of his life. Du Bois was born in Massachusetts just shortly after the end of the U.S. Civil War. So he's born in 1868 and he died on August 27th, 1963, the day before the Civil Rights Movement's March on Washington, where he was remembered in a moment of silence. So he lives from 1868, which is, you know, to contextualize him with our classical theorists, he's born in 1868, which is during Karl Marx's lifetime, and dies in 1963 in the middle of the Civil Rights Movement. This is a sort of contemporary picture of him here. A lot of editions of his books have a much older picture of him from, you know, maybe his graduate school days. But this is a contemporary picture of him, a color photograph, and I think that's nice to see. So Du Bois was educated at Fisk University in Tennessee. He also did some graduate work at the University of Berlin, and then he went on to receive his PhD from Harvard University. In 1896, he became an assistant instructor in sociology at the University of Pennsylvania, and there he conducted the pioneering sociological study of an urban community published as The Philadelphia Negro, a Social Study. He published that in 1899, but of course he conducted it from 1896 to 1897 while working at the University of Pennsylvania. So that would make this among the first works of scientific sociology. It would have been contemporaneous with Durkheim's scientific work of sociology, Suicide, which was published in 1897. And his scholarship and theoretical innovations, as well as being the sort of first American sociologist and one of the first sociologists in the world applying scientific methods of data collection and analysis, and really doing empirical investigations of society in that sort of rigorous scientific way, his theoretical innovations are also the foundations of contemporary critical race theory. If you want to learn more about how his work has been influential with prominent contemporary scholars, such as Michael Omi and Howard Renant, Eduardo Bonilla Silva, and Patricia Hill Collins, I highly recommend looking that up on the internet on your own, or I've posted a video on your Learn page that kind of briefly goes over some of these contemporary critical race theories and how they connect back to Du Bois. Du Bois had a long and interesting life, as you can see from the slide. He sort of traveled all over the world. He met all of these interesting people, several U.S. presidents, prominent civil rights leaders. He met Chairman Mao of the Chinese Communist Party. He was a bit of a polymath, and he did these ambitious and systematic sociological investigations like the Philadelphia Negro, but he also wrote about history, music, philosophy, education, and politics. His writing, if you've had a chance to dive into the text when you're listening to this, particularly you see this in The Souls of Black Folk, but his writing is a very beautiful and very direct in ways that academics rarely manage to be. He was a highly politically active and outspoken public figure. He's one of the founders of the NAACP and was an anti-segregation activist and then a civil rights activist, worked his whole life to combat racism and undermine racial oppression. He was an outspoken communist and very publicly opposed McCarthyism, for which he was eventually tried by the U.S. government as a foreign agent, and he was acquitted. He was part of the global Pan-African movement working to achieve political power and economic power for and decolonize people of African descent globally, and he had traveled to Ghana as part of this work when the U.S. Chose not to renew his passport. So he then sort of symbolically became a Ghanaian citizen, and he died in Ghana in 1963. As you can imagine, for an activist and scholar of his prominence, there were and are controversies surrounding Du Bois that I'm sure some of you are familiar with. The big one for our purposes in this class, I think, is his idea of the talented tenth. So this was an idea put forth by Du Bois that the highest achieving and best educated African Americans could and should help to end anti-Black racism by showing the world that they were wrong in their racist ideas about Black inferiority. The obvious critique with the talented tenth being, why should it be the responsibility of the oppressed to help the oppressor understand themselves? The other critique being, racist ideas aren't going to be dismantled by positive portrayals of African Americans or any group. So that's the critique, and my take when it comes to Du Bois is that this critique can be a little unfair, in part because Du Bois primarily makes his arguments at the infrastructural rather than the superstructural level, if you remember that terminology from Karl Marx. So he's largely making, in the text that we read for today, he's largely making economic, material arguments about strategies for undermining racial inequality. And this is a thread through a lot of his work, and sort of my second critique of this idea is that he's very skeptical of and critical of white society, an early theorist in what we might today call whiteness studies, and he's constantly unpacking the social construction of whiteness and the problems of the privileged social vantage point of whiteness when it comes to enacting anti-racist and decolonial projects. So you see that in this text, in his discussion of the psychological wages of whiteness. That comes up in the Black Reconstruction text. But of course, to the extent that he proposes with the Talented Tenth assimilation into white society as a solution to racial oppression, you know, I think the valid critique there is that history has revealed again and again that this idea simply does not work. So let's go to our second slide. I just want to show you the key theoretical concepts that we're trying to get out of our discussion of the readings. I gave you a lot of pages of Du Bois to read, in part because, for me, you never really come to a good stopping point with Du Bois. His story unfolds in these compelling narratives full of all of these historical details, personal anecdotes, in the case of The Souls of Black Folk, and for me, I find you just don't want to put it down. But here are the key theoretical concepts to be reading for in the Du Bois. If you haven't started it yet, you can sort of strategically pivot your reading to focus in on these concepts. First, in particular in the Black Reconstruction text, I want us to be looking at Du Bois's particular use of Marx's theoretical toolkit. So the toolkit that we have called materialism, the toolkit that we have called conflict theory, or that some call Marxist theory. The other two theoretical concepts come from the Souls of Black Folk text, and they are double consciousness and the veil. So let's talk about each of these in turn. Moving on to slide 3, if you're following along on the slideshow, on this slide, I've included two images here of infographics that Du Bois designed, in part to reinforce the idea that Du Bois was this gifted empirical observer of society. He often gets a lot of credit for his activism, for his moving way of writing, for his strength in capturing the Black experience. And I think also as sociologists, he must get credit where credit is due for his ways of systematically studying society and the interesting visual infographics that he designed for representing segments of society. And here you have on the left, I think, a graphic that represents where African-American populations were living, urban versus rural. And then on the right, you have the pie chart that shows a division in occupation, with the top half of the pie being the occupational divisions among African Americans, and the bottom half is occupational divisions among whites. And the red pie slices in that pie chart are agriculture. So this gives us a good jumping off point to talk about Black Reconstruction in America, 1860 to 1880. So hopefully, as you read these chapters of Black Reconstruction in America, you noticed Du Bois' use of Marx's theoretical framework of class conflict. Du Bois was not sort of an orthodox Marxist, but he uses Marxist terminology and Marxist theoretical framework and conceptual tools often throughout his work. And of course, as I mentioned, in his political life and his personal life, he was a dedicated communist. So Du Bois talks about the working classes and elite classes in this text in the context of both northern and southern states in the period of the U.S. Civil War and through Reconstruction. So the working classes and the elite classes being the proletariat and bourgeoisie, taken from Marx's concept of class struggle. So Du Bois talks about conflict over whether U.S. territories would enter the United States as states, as slaveholding or non-slaveholding states. And he does this through conflict theory in economic terms as a conflict over control of land by the working classes, rather than control of land by elites and landholders who were also more likely to be slaveholders. So he breaks down some of the economic dimensions of that particular struggle, but he also wants to kind of complicate the Marxist theoretical framework that divides society by class by using the United States as an example of other divisions among the working class that might inhibit some sort of unified class-based movement in the way that Marx imagines it. So, of course, for the United States, in the case of Du Bois, the most pertinent example there is race. And in the two chapters I assigned from Black Reconstruction in America, he's really going to talk about racial divisions and the racial dynamics of that sort of prevented a working class movement from emerging at the time of Reconstruction in the United States. So scholars in the Marxist tradition, ever since the time of Marx, have argued for years and years about one specific element of Marx's theories that is very relevant here, and this is the issue of class consciousness. If you remember, we talked about this when we talked about Marx's Manifesto of the Communist Party. The idea of class consciousness from Marx is that the proletariat, or the workers, would begin to think of themselves in terms of the class structure of society, and see themselves as a class, and that the material conditions of their lives, their exploitation by the bourgeoisie, and all of that was a function of their class position in society. And once they saw this, they would see that the only remedy for their exploited position within that structure would be a proletariat or workers' movement to undermine the authority of the bourgeoisie, take control of the means of production, and take ownership of it collectively. In this book, Du Bois shows that race and the dynamics of racism and racial resentment and inequality in the post-Civil War United States help explain why the working classes did not unite to oppose the propertied elites in this period. So he talks about workers, African-American workers, and white workers in two separate chapters, and talks about the various dynamics within those subgroups, including sort of resentments, fears, competition for, you know, limited good paying work, and other sorts of dynamics that prevented those groups, you know, poor working class, particularly agricultural populations, from joining forces in some sort of unified strike. The racial dynamics of worker competition that he describes, and the discussion of racism as a barrier to that unified strike or that unified class consciousness, are important extensions of Marxism that have influenced how we use conflict theories and how conflict theories have developed within contemporary race scholarship, and really shown how conflict theories have needed this influence or this added use of various variables to help explain why, you know, the proletariat class consciousness has sort of failed to develop in, you know, almost all cases. All right, so let's move on to the next slide, which is slide 4. We're going to move on to the text, The Souls of Black Folk. So first, I want you to take a moment to think back to the text or look back at the text for a story from Du Bois' childhood. So I'm going to start with a question. Du Bois starts the first chapter of The Souls of Black Folk by recounting a story of when he was a little boy and he's at school. What happened in the story, and what point is Du Bois trying to make with this story? So think about that while we talk about this excerpt from The Souls of Black Folk. So I'm going to read one of the opening passages of the book, in which Du Bois says, "Between me and the other world, there is ever an unasked question. Unasked by some through feelings of delicacy, by others through the difficulty of rightly framing it. All nevertheless flutter round it. They approach me in a half-hesitant sort of way, eye me curiously or compassionately, and then, instead of saying directly, 'How does it feel to be a problem?' they say, 'I know an excellent colored man in my town,' or 'I fought at Mechanicsville,' or 'Do not these southern outrages make your blood boil?' At these I smile, or am interested, or reduce the boiling to a simmer, as the occasion may require. To the real question, 'How does it feel to be a problem?' I answer seldom a word." This quote from the opening of the book has become one of the most famous passages of Du Bois' work. I want to talk about the substance of the passage, but I also want to point out the form of Du Bois' writing here as an example of what stands out about his style. He is telling us something with both the content of this text, but also with the form of it. See how he's showing the ways that these people who approach him signal his otherness to him? And the way he shows his response, that his subjective experience is something he rarely shares with these white voyeurs. And it's implied, of course, in this text that the people approaching him are white. So yes, in this book, Du Bois asserts that the problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line. And we've seen in Black Reconstruction and in his other work that I've talked about, he's very much doing structural analysis of the material conditions and resources of Black Americans. But in this book, he's doing something else as well. He's discussing the subjective experience of racial subjugation. Let's go to the next slide, The Souls of Black Folk. I want to discuss the theoretical concept of the veil, one of the two big concepts that come out of this text. So remember that I asked you in the last slide to think back to the childhood experience Du Bois talks about in that text. Hopefully you've had a chance to think about it or flip back to the text, and remember that this is an early experience of Du Bois, where he talks about being a little boy at school, and the students are going around exchanging these greeting cards. Now, the goal of exchanging these greeting cards would have been in an era before phones or any sort of in-home communication was really available. You would have these greeting cards so you would know where your classmates lived if you wanted to arrange a visit and play with your classmates. So he's going around exchanging these with everyone. And then this little white girl refuses to take his card. And this becomes the sort of story around which this part of the book is organized. And here he introduces the concept of the veil. So this quote follows directly after that story from his childhood. He says, "Then it dawned upon me with a certain suddenness that I was different from the others. Or like, mayhap, in heart and life and longing, but shut out from their world by a vast veil. I had thereafter no desire to tear down that veil, to creep through. I held all beyond it in common contempt and lived above it in a region of blue sky and great wandering shadows." So this is his subjective experience of probably one of his first encounters of racism. And he uses it to introduce the concept of the veil in this text. So the veil is a metaphorical device. It's a metaphorical veil that he's using to explain the division between himself and this white classmate, but also between his experience as an African-American person and the experiences of white people. This veil you can think of as perhaps a curtain hiding what's on stage from those people waiting for the play to start, or perhaps as a blindfold. It is an opaque thing, the veil, and it makes the African-American experience invisible to whites. Let's go to slide 6 and talk about double consciousness. So just as the veil signifies the ways that the African-American experience is made invisible to whites, it is apparent to Du Bois as a child that he is also shut out from the white world of white society by this vast veil. And there are so many things, as he talks about in the book, that are part of white society that he didn't realize were being kept aside for whites only through forces of racism directly, as well as the sort of structural conditions of racism that he documents in something like Black Reconstruction or The Philadelphia Negro. So the veil sort of signifies two different things, right? The African-American experience being invisible to whites, and then for Du Bois, it signifies the experience of being shut out from the world. But he also describes a third thing that the veil does, and that is to grant a second sight. So this is what he says, he calls it in the text, a second sight, being born with a veil, a second sight. The second sight is the phenomena of seeing oneself through the eyes of white society. The combination of one's own subjective experience and via this second sight of experiencing oneself as the other or outsider of white society leads to a social and psychological phenomena that Du Bois terms double consciousness. So let's read a quote from the text. "It is a peculiar sensation, this double consciousness, this sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amused contempt and pity. One ever feels his two-ness, an American, a Negro, two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body whose dogged strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder." So this is a very visceral description here of the experience of double consciousness. So double consciousness, again, is that awareness simultaneously of oneself as, you take yourself to be, and then as oneself through the not necessarily benevolent eyes of another segment of society that sees you as other or inferior or seeks to exclude you from, their society. So it's this kind of puzzling second sight and ability to perceive both of those things simultaneously that he describes the experience of in these visceral and uncomfortable ways, but I think also that he sees as giving him, as a black theorist, a particular advantage in being able to reveal these phenomena, these trends, these experiences in ways that might undermine them, right? So when I say this is the foundation of critical race theory, the idea of a critical theory is that it is a theory that seeks not just to be explanatory of, say, oppressive phenomena or oppressive social structures, but a theory that seeks to, by describing them, by theorizing them, to undermine them and to dismantle them. So I think you can really see here Du Bois asserting that the double consciousness, the second sight, the veil, the awareness of all of those things grants him as a theorist and perhaps other theorists that he, wants to train as an academic and as a scholar or to influence as a public intellectual and activist, the ability to potentially undermine those structures and to use those subjective experiences to undermine oppressive and subjugating social structures and superstructural ideologies throughout the world, which is, of course, then what he dedicates his life to. So, this is the project of the book, in part to theorize the possibilities for merging this double self. So that's it for this week's podcast in terms of the theoretical content. I really recommend, searching for Du Bois and reading a little bit more about his life because it is just endlessly fascinating, all of the things he was involved in and all of the people that he met and all of the activism he was engaged in. And it is also definitely worth your while to head over to Learn and watch the video that I posted about Du Bois' contemporary influence on, some of the most prominent sociologists working in the field today. And then don't forget to, if you are in my class, complete the discussion board questions and the short quiz if you haven't yet completed those. And I look forward to speaking with you all again on next week's episode of the Sociological Theory Podcast.